Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. This is Paul Diener Jr. with Jim Ossarski. It's finally here.
Yes.
We are done talking about preseason and speculation and rehab timetables.
Right.
Actually, we're probably not done talking about rehab timetables. Yeah. But we can actually start talking about football this Sunday. Bengals at the Jets, week one. Thank goodness.
Yes. And actually, you know what? That was the mood in the locker room today.
Yeah.
A lot of the vets. Real football.
Yeah.
Ping pong table's been moved into the other room. You know?
It's when it's getting serious.
Yeah. So even, look, we're just around these guys. We don't play. And even those guys are just tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The preseason's long. Man,
yeah,
and it was even longer for these guys because they were dealing with all these. Everybody was going down every week and what have you. I mean, it was one of those things where it felt like forever,
right?
And this is a team that's been there and done that, and they just want to get back to being there and doing that, and not going through all the other stuff. But before we jump too quickly and everything, I just do want to do a quick rundown of what we're going to have on the BBP today. Sort of a season preview type thing. We got to get through all the moves that were made and what they mean and get to that, so we'll get to that. But also, we're going to have from Bengals.com, the wall is down, inviting in Jeff Hobson as we do sort of a more of a season preview look, sitting down with him. I mean, we haven't quite got deep into that, so we'll sit down and the three of us will sort of hash out about 15 minutes of where we feel this season is going. So we've got that coming. Of course, we'll get into all these moves. You'll hear from Bill Lazor talking about some of the stuff that's going to be in our special section, which comes out on Thursday, talking about the offense and if this is truly a passing league and what that means, because a lot of people are saying, hey, the Bengals need to get out there and run the ball. Well, is that still a way that it can happen? You talked to Paul Gunther and Domantopeko about defense and about particularly the way Domantopeko is viewed by fans, probably by you who are cursing his name right now. For whatever reason, there's this thing out there about him. So you talked to them about that perception, which is going to be a very common theme throughout our special section, which I hope you'll enjoy that and pick it up. We're going to have that. Of course, we'll have our Swedish shout-out. Huge shout-out back to all the Swedes that sent us emails and tweets this week.
Yeah, that was big.
Who are loving the fact that we're all about the Swedes now. It's because we didn't know we had such a huge Swedish fan base. So we always do our Swedish shout-out. Jim's going to get mad about something, and we'll go on from there. One last thing before we go forward, though. I want to get a bit of news. Breaking news. We've had such a great response to all of you that love the BBP, that listen to the podcast. You've been fantastic, and a lot of you tell us this is the only way you get your news, and we just hear so much from you. I decided that this year, this season, it only seems right that we add a second BBP. I'll pause for cheering, screaming, general jumping up in the air. But seriously, though, really looking forward to this. Every Thursday, so obviously in season on these normal weeks, there's a Sunday game, You have the BBP post on Tuesday. We're going to have a second one on Thursday that's going to be from Jim and I, a shorter sort of just more of a look ahead at the Jets, maybe some stuff that we get in the locker room on Wednesday and Thursday where a lot of action happens. You know, so you're talking about the game ahead during the week. And then we're going to add in the hot seat from Tuesday's Beyond the Stripes, which is usually a fairly entertaining 10 minutes. So a chance to this Thursday, you'll have Andy Dalton from Beyond the Stripes. You'll hear what Doc had to say when he had his conversation with him. And then we're going to have a Throwback Thursday interview. Big shout out to Lindsey Patterson, who's really taking on this project and trying to set this up, where I'll talk to somebody from Bengals past. Whether they were a player or not, or a coach, or maybe somebody who did something very badly to this team. But anyway, a lot of interesting candidates are going to be coming up. So we have a Throwback Thursday every single week on the back end of that podcast as well. So something a little different, but still a little more look ahead of the season. So the project I know I'm really excited about. I hope you are too. I'm guessing if you listen to BBP, you maybe think this is possibly some pretty good news. So anyway, thanks to all of you guys that listen, because, you know, we would never do this. Trust me, I would not add all this extra work. It's worth it, though, because you guys really love the podcast. So pumped about that and looking forward to it. All right, that's enough in business. Let's move on. Anyway, so the Bengals do get down to their 53-man roster. We had lots of speculation about that last week. Kind of run down what ended up happening. It was a busy, a little more detailed couple of days than you typically see this time of year. But because the Bengals were dealing with injuries and some other things they were trying to do, it took about 48 hours to flush itself out to see really where they were going. But as we told you, Cedric Pierman and William Jackson III end up getting placed on IR. One of the two of them will be able to come back later this year on the IR designation return. Not both, just one of them. The Bengals will figure out whichever fits best in their plan at that point. When those two went on IR, that cleared up room to add two extra players, and it was Trey Hopkins, offensive lineman, and cornerback Shockey Brown ended up coming back. Both those guys were let go on Saturday, but then they told them, hey, hang out, be patient. We're going to put you guys back on once we make the IR moves, but we have to wait till Sunday to do that. So they did. Both of those basically, I mean, it's true. Both of those are basically just as fail-safes for guys that are fighting back from injury.
Right, yeah, and speaking of, I mean, Darquez Denard practice, or at least in the open session available. We're in that period now, as a reminder to fans, we only see 20 minutes, and it's really up to the coaches what that is. A lot of times just stretch. But today there was actually some teamwork going on, and Darquez Denard was out. No brace on the ankles, which is what they hoped. But yeah, if Shockey Brown and Trey Hopkins, you know, and even to an extent Marquise Flowers are key parts of this team, you know, in 2, 3, 4 weeks, especially when Burfict comes back, that's not good.
No.
But, you know, for right now, you need some bodies, you need healthy guys who can do multiple things, and at least on the surface, they can do things.
Yeah, I mean, they're healthy bodies for right now that are fail safes in case some stuff happens. I mean, I think, you know, you're looking at what is good. What is good right now is all those guys that have been hurt are out participating in team practice. Cedric Opoehi says he's going to start on Sunday. That's huge. He missed the entire preseason essentially with the toe injury. Jake Fisher looks like he's going to be able to go. He was out there practicing today. He had the ankle injury that he hurt in Detroit. So that was really one of your more devastating areas, was when both your tackles went down and you started freaking out, and they started trying Trey Hopkins out at tackle, which is why he's still here in case those guys don't get all the way back or something happens or whatever. So elsewhere then, Shockey Brown, he's still here, with Darquez still up in the air. Chris Lewis Harris had a ding in the preseason finale, but I don't think there's too much worry about him. But still, there's guys that are beat up there. William Jackson III who's not a part of the team. I mean, they were looking for a little bit extra depth there. But you're right. Marvin Lewis made it pretty clear this roster is very fluid.
Right.
there's going to be movement. in a lot of areas. And so that brings us to the two most interesting things that happened this weekend. One, quarterback Jeff Driskel, now a Cincinnati Bengal. You're saying to me, well, who the hell is Jeff Driskel, right? Well, Florida Gators fans might remember him for getting benched after a couple of years of inconsistent play right there. He ended up transferring to Louisiana Tech and played his final season there. Was a six-round draft pick of the San Francisco 49ers. He was with San Francisco for the whole preseason. He was 15-31 for 152 with no touchdowns and two picks.
Well, and just so people know, he didn't even look at any notes for that.
I didn't. I just had that off the top of my head because I've written that three times in the last 2 days. Because I got that committed to memory. That will be gone too. That'll be gone probably by the time this is posted. I won't even remember any of those numbers. But for right now, I've got it. But so Driskel, the Bengals use a waiver claim on him because they wanted to make sure that they got him, and I think that it would ended up being necessary. They've been trying to add to the back of this quarterback room for a while now. We, you know, those of you that have been listening to the BBP through the offseason heard us talk about the Zach Mettenberger missed claim. They put a claim in on him when he ended up going to San Diego. They want to get a third QB in here that has a little bit more presence, a little bit more ability to be developed, someone with physical tools that they can work with,
right,
that they can over a year or two be able to turn him into a backup quarterback, or maybe more if you need a guy in a pinch. So I know everyone's sitting here thinking.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to know, does this mean they're trading A.J. McCarron? No. This does not mean they're trading A.J. McCarron. It means they are setting a domino in motion. There's a lot of dominoes after this.
Right.
They're setting a domino in motion to maybe at some point being able to do that, because they're not going to trade him unless they have someone that can take over for him.
Right.
Because they don't want to lose the insurance policy there.
Yeah, and honest, I mean, this was a conversation, you know, back again, just to refresh people with Mettenberger, you know, a year ago when A.J. McCarron is leading the team, you know, you're one snap away, and this almost happened when he got hurt. He hurt his hand at Denver on that Monday night, and there was a real thought, you know, oh, is Keith Winning going to have to take this team into the playoff game or that last end of the season? And, you know, and obviously, with the moves at the end of this preseason, the team really wasn't comfortable with that because Keith Wenning's not here, and Jeff Driskel is.
And Jeff Driskel is.
So yeah, you're right.
And they were willing to go as far as to make a waiver claim and not try to just persuade a guy to join their practice squad or whatever. I mean, that's how much they wanted it. And here's the thing: the scouting report on Driskel coming out was a lot of good physical tools. But he's raw, and he's going to have to be taught how to play the position a little bit. And he had a really disastrous final preseason game. He kind of told us that he was never in the quarterback competition that they were having out there with Gabbert and Kaepernick and all that stuff. Right. So I don't know if he was saying that sort of jaded-like, like he never really felt like he had a chance out there. But clearly a change of scenery might be good for him. And Ken Zampezi has a history of developing quarterbacks, particularly, he had Ryan Fitzpatrick here under Carson Palmer, and Fitzpatrick, the Bengals will be seeing him on Sunday. And then A.J. McCarron, obviously, what McCarron was able to do stepping in. McCarron was a fifth-round draft pick. Driskel was a sixth-round draft pick. It's a very similar concept, trying to just keep that going, because in a couple of years, A.J. McCarron's contract's going to be up, and he ain't going to stay here.
No.
Not as long as Andy Dalton's still here. And who knows? Maybe next preseason a quarterback gets hurt and people start throwing around all kinds of crazy deals and you feel a little more comfortable trading an A.J. McCarron because you like what you saw out of Jeff Driskel in the preseason. They just need to have someone that they feel comfortable enough with to pull that kind of a trigger. And it just goes to show you what you can get. Sam Bradford, who had a huge contract and was with the Eagles, ends up getting traded to Minnesota for a first and a fourth. A 2018 fourth.
Right.
But there was that. What did we say with the whole time with this McCarron thing?
Right.
You better have a first round pick and then we can talk. Well, guess what? They were calling they had a first round pick that was on the table. I don't think the Bengals were entertaining much of it.
No, clearly not. You know, and, you know, even a first round and a fourth round, you know, there's other things there too. Say what you want about Sam Bradford and being owed $35 million over the next 2 years. I mean, the guy actually, he has a longer starting history. You know, Zimmer and the Vikings feel they're a Super Bowl contending team, and you know, his track record, his body of work is more extensive than AJ's. And it being the former number one pick in the draft, I mean, I say what you want about his production, but his talent level is probably not probably. I mean, he's Sam Bradford's got a skill set that AJ McCarron doesn't have.
Yeah,
so
there's
a
reason he was number one overall.
Right,
I could at
see,
one point,
you know, so that's why.
But he doesn't have the value, obviously.
Right.
So we'll see. I mean, those that keeps talking about the trading, don't you can stop talking about the trading of McCarron. You know, it just brings it up when you know
extra quarterbacks are added,
right? And you read, you know, Peter King had a nice nugget, the lead actually in his Monday Morning Quarterback this week, which was about the sort of the background of how Bradford got done, and you know, they were talking about how there was blood in the water for Rick Spielman, who was trying to talk to teams about trades because people are saying, yeah, we want a first and we want Harrison Smith or Kendricks or Barr. Right. I mean, you know, that's great to trade a Pro Bowler and a first-round pick is a crazy thing to ask for. But that's probably what it would have taken.
Yeah.
I mean, if that is probably legitimately the only way.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was either that or pay Sam Bradford $35 million.
Right.
I mean, seriously, that's what it came down to. Was were you? They were clearly willing to move the one, and then it was: do we move a four and then take on all this money, or do we move a player for a guy for a quarterback? I mean, it was interesting. I mean, that clearly blood in the water, and they had to pick which one was going to bleed us out a little less.
Exactly.
And in their mind, because they feel like they can win a division, go to Super Bowl, they'd rather pay the money, give up a future pick as opposed to a current player. And look, we don't know, honestly, Paul, I can't tell you right now as we record this if the Bengals were 100% in that mix, if they were one of the sort of shadow teams Peter King alluded to. But if they were, look how we started this conversation. All these injury issues and problems on the current 53 for the Bengals, would it be shocking if this team asked for a player?
No.
Especially one that, you know, coming out of Mike Zimmer, they'd probably feel real comfortable with in terms of all of the being able to just kind of step right in.
And know the system.
Right.
Yeah, and do all that stuff. I mean, it's Gunther and Zimmer on the exact same system. So that's the whole quarterback situation. And Driscoll is here. And for right now, he's on the 53. The Bengals have not kept three quarterbacks since 2010 before the rule change where they took away the whole emergency quarterback thing and made it a 46-man roster instead of a 45-man roster. So this roster's fluid. I would suspect at some point we're probably going to see Jeff Driscoll on the practice squad. But that they wanted to get him here first.
Right.
And let him know that you're our guy first or else he just would have ended up in San Francisco or wherever. So, but for right now, he's on the 53. So as the corresponding move the Bengals made on Sunday, I think what opened the most eyes was they cut P.J. Dawson.
Yeah. That was, I would say, you know, locally, that was the biggest headline.
Yes. It was the biggest news. It was the biggest news to come out of this, probably personnel-wise, to come out of this camp, I think.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Paul Gunther fired a salvo back in February at P.J. Dawson.
Yeah.
When he sat with all of us at the Combine, and he went off on how P.J. needs to learn how to be a pro. He said, the reason I stood on the table and said, we need this guy here because he saw the tape.
Yeah.
And he heard everybody talk about how he's not a very good pro and, you know, you're going to have, quote, character issues. That was the scouting report on him. I mean, I went back through his NFL Combine report the other day, and it was the thing everywhere. NFL, you know, anonymous scout or whatever. Right. Everybody's saying it doesn't take long for you to find out that he's got issues as for being mature enough and a pro and understanding all that. You know, you got to show up on time to things.
Right.
You got to be show up and care. You've got to be the right weight. You've got to be able to do all these things that aren't playing on Sundays in order to earn trust around here. And Paul Gunther said, hey, this guy has not done this. He said it then. He said it's a huge offseason for him, so he had to do it.
That said, you know, here's the thing. It's also, ideally, I think in the Bengals' mind, it's a wake up call move.
Absolutely.
Because as we're talking about, you know, fluid rosters and things. I mean, one thing we didn't mention here at the jump was that the team did not fill out its practice squad. There's only 9.
Yep.
Which that left a spot, and a rookie has practice squad eligibility, or second year player has one. And you tweeted this out when the locker room opened up that his locker was not empty. You know, and I think, and as far as we know, as we record this, Paul Dawson isn't claimed.
No,
he has not been claimed.
He did not get claimed.
So, you know, it is, there's a door, there's an open door, I'd say, for him to return on the practice squad. Obviously, that ball's in PJ's court.
Yeah, and I'd expect him to. I mean, I still think he knows that his best,
right.
I mean, the fact that no one claimed him.
Says a lot.
And this is where, if you're the Bengals, this is what you're thinking with PJ Dawson. We cannot play with PJ Dawson in the current form.
Right.
In their opinion, they cannot trust it. They don't feel like they have a guy motivated enough or understanding of what it means. They'll call it probably the privilege of being an NFL player.
Right.
They could play with a motivated, re-inspired, right. humbled.
Right.
PJ Dawson. And really, they probably felt through this move that was about their only chance.
Right. Yeah. Because look, you know, that PJ endeared himself to the media when he was drafted.
Yeah.
Because he came in, he heard the Vontaze Burfict comparisons. He was like, I'm ready. I'm ready to start.
Right.
And you know, he came in with sort of that bravado and, you know, It we saw some of it in the preseason last year.
He was great in the preseason.
Yeah,
but he looked just like his tape did at TCU.
But conspicuously absent during Vontaze Burfict's PUP stint. Was not on the field. Ray Maluga gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Where was PJ?
Right.
And that just said a lot to, and then, as you said, that was the run-up to Paul Gunther's sort of speech during the combine. And I think it just continued through. Not just I think, Paul, we know this. I mean, yeah. we can tell the fans, like, just, you know, through camp, they clearly didn't say, we know this because he was waived.
Yes.
You know, so, and then, yeah, if he's back, the hope is yeah, it's a humbling experience, and the kid realizes it doesn't matter if you're a third-round pick.
Yeah.
James Wright might still be here after all these years, and you know, some other draft picks might still be here after all these years, but, you know, we will move you or you know.
Yeah,
kind of tug at your future,
and perhaps if the moves happening the way they would have forced the Bengals' hand to
that,
do it this way, whereas the motivation would he would have been inactive every day,
right?
Every week, it would have been the four. But I mean, nothing wakes you up like this. Not only do you get cut, but no one even claims you.
Yeah,
because what you're. I mean. Maybe it's what this guy needs, and I'm sure that's why the Bengals feel that way, and all expectations are that he probably will come back here and end up on their practice squad. So that's kind of where they end up with PJ Dawson. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this team, and this season. Well, we'll get into more of this when we come and welcome Butch Hobson. Welcome Butch Ian from Bengals.com. Talk to Jeff. About a number of things, and we'll touch on some of this stuff, I'm sure. But, you know, there's a thought of this is a passing league, right?
Right.
So that's what it's all about. You got to be able to throw the ball if you want to win. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. No one's saying it's not. But when you the question is for the Bengals, who look at a team whose strengths clearly on offense – or at least known quantities on offense have shifted away from the passing game and towards the running game. Is it in the best interest of the Bengals to kick away the passing league notion for a little bit and be I formation, Jeremy Hill behind Ryan Hewitt and Tyler Croft and Jake Fisher as your move tight end and be out there trying to hammer people and letting their defense and special teams win? It's an interesting question, and I think early in the season, one that the Bengals are probably going to be experimenting with.
Yeah, it is, and you know, I think I think they should. I mean, we saw it a lot in the preseason. I think largely because Brandon LaFell didn't play until the last game. I mean, they were shorthanded. No Tyler Eifert, as we knew, no Croft. So Ryan Hewitt, CJ Uzama were healthy. So basically the early parts of Ken Zampezi's play calling that we saw were heavy. You know, and then he would split Ryan Hewitt out. Or then, you know, CJ would break out and line up, you know, on the outside or come back in. So you're right, Paul. I think the Bengals are built for that uniquely, I think. You know, Giovanni Bernard doesn't fit the physical description of a, you know, what you'd call a power runner. But, I mean, we heard this from Hugh Jackson last year, that they feel he runs like someone who's twice his size.
Yeah.
You know, and blocks that way, too. So, I mean, I think, you know, they are uniquely positioned to do that as they sort of find their identity as a passing offense.
Yeah, you're right. Because especially in these early weeks when you've got no Eifert,
right,
it just changes everything. And you've got Brandon LaFell, who Andy Dalton's still not throwing a completed pass right to in a game at any point. And you've got Tyler Boyd's going to be in his first game. He's got to play and be impactful immediately. That's a lot to ask of. And you've got a new coordinator.
Right,
doing it for the first time, so you've just got a lot of things. But you know what you always know you can do, have this your big five offensive linemen line up and block for two quality running backs.
Yeah,
everyone in their prime in that running game right now.
Yeah,
and I think it's something they look at. So I want to bring in this conversation I had with Bill Lazor as part of my offense story for the special section. Bengals. He's been a coordinator before. He's current quarterbacks coach here. So he knows a lot about the dynamics of offense in this league, and I thought he was really insightful talking about the concept of if this is a passing league and if you can win not treating it as such.
Right.
And if the pendulum is starting to swing back away from that passing trend and maybe back to favoring some of these running teams like we've seen with Denver and Seattle and your San Francisco 49ers when they went to Super Bowl and things like that. So anyway, here's that conversation with Bill Lazor.
Just sort of, I mean, you've been a coordinator in this league. It's such a passing league. It's like the cliche word. But you've seen teams. Can a team take a running game as their primary weapon and make a run of the Super Bowl? We've sort of seen it.
Sure.
Where some teams can.
It's been done. Usually, in my opinion, in order to score enough points, only running the ball, you better have great special teams and great defense.
Yeah.
You know, I think the team, you know, most teams are trying to find a way to be balanced because when you keep the defense off balance, it's easier to pass block and it's easier to run block.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that the biggest downfall from if you went in and decided to throw it every play, which some teams have done and some have been successful, it's real hard to pass ball.
Yeah. And those
guys, that's the biggest issue.
And that's
because you can score points.
Offensive linemen will tell you all the time. They're like, if I have to go back there and pass block every play.
If they know that's what we're doing, it's hard. That's why 2 minute is so hard. That's why third and long is so hard. It's the hardest parts of playing offense for the line and the quarterback are 2 minute.
Yeah.
Third and long. They know you're passing. Here they come.
Yeah.
You know, so that's tough.
Is there a stat? I was kind of just breaking down some of the numbers. Where have teams that have made runs been statistically strong offensively, whether it's composition? Seems like passing yards per play.
That's been
best correlation.
Yeah, because that works whether you pass a lot or only choose to pass a little. It's regardless of how much you choose to pass, how effective are you?
Really nowhere else. I mean, it's not like teams where every team that is top five in running or top five in total yards, that's the one. It's the one where almost everyone has been tough because you can run all the time.
Sure.
But as long as you're efficient when you pass it is when you're the most dangerous. Is that kind of where you guys look at it here too?
I think it's a common thing. I think it's a common way to look at that.
Yeah.
That stat has been regarded as a fairly good one. It's a hard game to the analytics people are doing their best right now to pinpoint the magic numbers, but it's hard to find one magic number in anything in football because there's so many people playing, there's so many different strategies of how you decide to play the game, and your offense and defense rely on each other. You know, some of the best defenses I've been around statistically have been years when our offense didn't score a lot of points.
Right, yeah.
So then the other team didn't worry about pushing the ball at the end of the game. I mean,
yeah.
So it's hard to look at anything in football in a vacuum.
Yeah.
You got to, you know, so the head coach's job is to look at the whole team and how he wants to play, and our job is to score points.
Yeah.
Until he tells us to slow it down.
So, I mean, we've talked a lot about Jeremy Hill and what he can do, but I mean, looking at New York,
right?
Are you going to go run up into that line though? You know, I mean, and that's the rub. I mean, are you going to go and just you're going to 35 times? Are you going to pound it at Muhammad Wilkerson?
Well, you know, we'll hear from Jeff Hobson on this one.
Yeah.
You know, Butchie goes back to like, you know, the 20s.
Yeah.
but you know, in his defense, in a lot of ways, and is what we were talking about before, it's not just the running backs, Paul. I mean, at some point, you've got to believe that, you know, you're two sort of borderline Pro Bowl type guards, at least guards that you pay a lot of money to. Those guys are two of the top 15 paid guards in the league right now. In base mm-hmm. salary, Andrew Whitworth, an all-pro left tackle, and Cedric Obuehi, while, you know, questions still remain and remain to be seen about how good he'll be. He was drafted in the first round for a reason. Handed a starting job for a reason. You know, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
Ryan Hewitt just got a 3-year contract extension. So if you're going to – there has to be the belief in Paul Brown Stadium, in these Bengals coach, that if you were going to 3rd-and-1, right, or even 2nd-and-4 – You're gonna get the first down.
Yes.
Running the ball. So I think it's one of those things where, again, this team is uniquely positioned to do that. And then, oh, by the way, you know, 18's out there.
Yes.
Right? I mean, not discounting the second round draft pick or the 2-time Pro Bowl quarterback.
And just to pile on how happy I am that the regular season is here. A.J. Green versus Darrell Revis is going to be a gem.
For real, too,
on
right?
opening
not just
day.
Like
yes.
a couple
With a lot on the line.
Right.
I mean, on opening day in New York, I mean, A.J. Green versus Darrell Revis, what else do you want?
Right.
You know, the Bengals would like to be able to exploit those other cornerbacks, and in reality, that's probably more where this game will be decided, is the unknowns about LaFell and Boyd
right.
Against the others on that Jets defense. So we'll see how all that goes. I want to flip now over to the defense and to Domantas Peko and conversations you had with Paul Gunther. Why do people hate Domantas?
Well, I think it's two things, Paul. One is he's been it's almost like Marvin Lewis. It's like Domantas fatigue.
Yeah.
It's like for some reason people love when their baseball player stays for 15 years, but if you're in football, it's like no. Out, be done. So I think there's like, wow, this dude's been here for like as long as some Bengals fans have been watching the team. So I think there's that. I think there's his money. He's made at least $3 million a year for 6 years?
Yeah.
7 years?
Mm-hmm.
And then you couple that with anywhere from a half to like 3 sacks, last year excluded. I think it's just a guy that like he's there and fans... Who, you know, where TV makes you follow the ball. He doesn't have fumbles, doesn't recover fumbles, doesn't bring the quarterback down.
Does everybody remember the sack dance? The belly dance?
Nah, I think
you think the belly dance? I thought the belly dance would endear him. I thought it would like, it would,
see, that's
like everybody
funny
loved
thing.
That.
He is probably, well, in a locker room full of like nice guys, he's got like, he's got to be in the running for nicest guy or best human.
Absolutely. No,
so,
without a doubt.
So, like, on one hand, I think he's really. Well liked, I think it's one of those things. Like he's a good guy, Paul.
Yeah,
Jim, he's a good guy. But what does he do?
Right. No one knows.
I think
what
we
he
get
does.
That question a lot.
I am amazed, and I think it stems from there's just you know whether it's Pro Football Focus,
yeah,
who we're working with this year. But that,
yeah.
but that that's because there's this perceived, real or not, knowledge of defense of line play.
Right.
Right? And of who's failing on the line, who's getting beat up.
Right.
Right? But Paul Gunther will tell you that those people don't know anything about what Domantas' role actually
yes.
is. There are these grunt work guys, and I'm not defending. I honestly don't know for sure if he's what Pro Football Focus makes him out to be or what the Bengals coaches make him out to
right.
be. But I do know that the Bengals had set a franchise record for fewest points allowed last year, and Domantas Peko started every single game.
Yeah.
And the coaches that racked up those few that points record tell us that he's great.
Yeah.
This is right. all. This is all I
right.
know.
And then, and then Pro Football Focus will say this dude has played over a decade and he's only been good twice,
right?
In two of those years, and none of them have been in the last six or seven.
Yeah. So it's just an interesting thing to see because you're right. He's got the hair. He's got the dance. He's got the nice guy. He's like Mr. Cincinnati.
Yeah.
He's out everywhere. He's, man. You know.
Yeah.
He's got the Samoan thing going. I mean, you just can't be a nicer, more likable guy. I mean,
right.
Bengals fans love hair.
Yeah.
It's known. They have always loved hair and all things crazy. You know, they instantly like a player if his hair come out the back of his helmet. Always have.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and this guy, and I, you know, Domantas Peko, he runs and like cheers on the fans before every single game. He's the first guy down there into that like end zone area, pumping them up, high-fiving, doing his thing. And it all, and yet everyone just wants to complain about this guy.
Yeah.
Because the perception is he stinks.
Yeah.
And everybody inside of the building says the opposite. So you sort of explored that a little bit, which I thought was a really cool story, and it's going to be in our special section when you pick it up on Thursday.
Yeah, and guess what, people? He hears you.
Oh, he hears you.
He sees it. So, yeah, I think here, listen to Domantas here and what he has to say on all y'all.
On all y'all. Here's Domantas Peko and Paul Gunther.
And you mentioned that you try not to pay attention to things that you do hear about yourself or whatever, but does it get frustrating? Because it seems like you play one of those positions that, like, unless you're a coach or maybe a player, the general public, they're just not going to know. So does it,
it sucks sometimes, you know, when I if I do happen to just Google myself and I read some stuff that people say, it sucks, you know, but when I come to work and I get my grade sheet from after games and it's like an A+, you know, and it's all good, then I'm like, they don't know what they're talking about, you know,
because
my own team is giving me good grades or whatnot. But, you know, that's a part of just being a nose guard, man. You just got to, you know, ignore the noise. And that's what one of the things we have in our defensive room is just says ignore the noise. And that's for positive stuff and negative stuff. So people are on you, ignore it. But if people are praising you and stuff, you got to kind of be evened out, you know, and kind of ignore that too. But I just try to do the best I can, give my best effort every play, and it's been working for me.
First thing I want to say is I you can print this. I don't know. You know, I think PFF's a hell of a product. It's just I'm not sure if they're, you know, not just PFF but all the experts are really trying to understand what we're telling them to do. So I mean, he's supposed to do this and he does that, and you know, so that to me it can be a little bit skewed. But Domantas, you know, he's one of the leaders of our team. He's been a pillar, not only on the field, but off the field for us on defense. He's one of those guys that wants to do it right, please the coaches all the time.
Yeah.
He studies, his attention to detail is excellent. He's an unselfish guy. So as a coach, he's got just about every trait you're looking for. And, you know, his role, you know, as a nose guard, you know, a lot of times he's taken up double teams.
Yeah.
So Vontaze and Ray and linebackers can go ahead and make tackles downhill. And those linebackers will tell you to a man that, you know, those guys, not only Domantas, but the guys up front do a good job of playing their blocks and playing their responsibilities. You know, when I look around the league a lot, and you watch some of these teams, and, we make a big pride in our run fits, where you're supposed to be in the running game. And, you know, you just the only thing you can compare is the other teams.
Right.
And, you know, I think we do a really good job with that. The players understand, you know, the techniques and where they're supposed to be all the time.
Don't get in Domantas' grill.
No.
You know, like, just stop being like that.
You make him sad.
You make him sad. Don't make him sad.
Then he's
got
to wait till he gets the grade from his coaches to tell him he got an A+.
Yes. I don't know. I think everyone will sort of have their opinion about certain things.
Right.
But, you know, we're going to be suckers for, like, the nicest dude ever.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say yay or nay. I mean, there's guys on this team that aren't nice, and there's guys in this team that are as nice as Domitai is, and that's not going to affect the way we judge and criticize the way they play if they play poorly. But when everyone in the building keeps telling you he's not playing poorly,
yeah,
at a certain point, those are probably the people that I'm gonna listen to. And then they've backed it up by continuing to trot him out there
and
have a great what's been a great defense for a number of years now.
Right, no, exactly. And they keep paying him. I mean, we'll see what happens after this year. He's getting to that age, but, I mean, you know, there was a reason. And even Carlos Dansby, where he told me he's like he loves guys like that and playing behind guys like that. And as a 13-year vet himself, he's like, this league, they don't keep you.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't do the job, they don't keep you, they don't pay you. And Domantas Pecos, you know.
Captain gotten, paid.
Yes.
all right, it's time for our Swedish shout-out, which I'm very excited about. I want to shout-out to all of you, all of our Swedes. That reached out to us this past week, and I want to try to, you know, they said lots of thanks. One even offered to take me to what he called the best restaurant in all of Sweden, place called Nomo, is where he said he was gonna take me to. He said I gotta fly myself there.
Yeah,
so a little expensive on that end. So we'll see if I get a raise at some point, and maybe I'll.
You know what? Just win a Jags bet this year.
Shoot.
And you might, that could be the bet.
The bet is a ticket to Sweden to go to Nomo with our guy. I think it was Lars that sent me that one. Lars in Sweden. Thanks, buddy. Okay, I got another one from, and I'm going to excuse this because I am going to butcher your name, Hakan Baverstrand, who said, listen to this BVP. Finally realized that the Bengals have a strong and important following in Sweden. He points out he's been a loyal listener for a long time, enjoys the podcast, a number of other things. He says, I may come with a small wish for one of your upcoming episodes. I would really be interested to hear your honest and, of course, unbiased opinion about where we now stand in comparison to the rest of the AC North. I think the Steelers are considered by the pundits to be the favorites to win the division, and maybe the Bengals the second. How do you rate our chances, given the state of the team and what the others have been doing in the offseason? All right. From Stockholm, Sweden, Hogan. I think he goes by Hogan. Looks like Hogan. So, anyway, thanks for the shout-out, and let's talk about it. Let's talk about the Steelers v. Bengals v. Ravens, and then the Browns are a joke at the bottom of the division. You know, our predictions will be out in the Thursday special section. But because we love our BBPers, I'll give you a little sneak peek. I have the Steelers above the Bengals right now. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, it's going to come down to those two games between these two teams again, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same way?
No, I do. I do think that way. Because, again, I always assume complete health across the board for all teams. And I just think the Bengals, while I do like their 46, I don't think they're as good as they were a year ago. I think Pittsburgh is. I know they got holes in their secondary, but I do think. And when I say this, Paul, I don't think either of us are sitting here thinking Pittsburgh's 14-2,
absolutely,
and Bengals
not.
Are 9-7. I mean, it's close.
I think that they're going to be
right
between 11-5 and 9-7, depending
right
on who wins these two tilts.
Right.
You know, maybe a sweep of the Steelers and the Bengals could be 12-4.
Right.
Getting swept, and I think you're looking more in the 9-7 range,
right,
or 10-6, whatever.
Right.
I just think that's what it's going to come down to. The interesting thing, there's going to be so many pieces missing on both sides in this week two game.
Right.
When you're talking about Le'Veon Bell's going to be out, of course, Martavis Bryant's missing the whole season. Ladarius Green, who was really their big free agent signing,
right,
a tight end, and they don't have Heath Miller anymore.
Right.
Is not going to be playing.
Right. Brand new corner.
Yeah.
And Justin Gilbert.
Justin Gilbert. Who, I mean, that's where their corners are at. They're
right
trading for a dude who basically the Browns were trying to give away.
Right.
Who couldn't beat out like a fifth round pick,
right,
or something this year.
And another rookie, Artie Burns, who they picked after William Jackson.
Who they
third,
wanted
just
William
got
Jackson.
The field. Right, yeah. So, I mean, they've got some issues back there.
They've got a lot of issues in their secondary. You know, and everyone thought this big offense gearing up. Well, those guys, none of them are playing except for Ben and Antonio Brown.
Right.
So that's going to a possible swing game there, but it's in Hines. And, of course, the Bengals without Perfect, potentially without Eifert.
Right.
And who knows what will come of this first weekend's of games. I mean, there's – and they've got the new receivers. There's just a lot of – there's a lot of things happening there. But I think I give the Steelers a little bit of the edge right now. I think the Ravens are a distant third.
Yeah, I'm not buying the whole, like, the old guys are healthy and then we'll play like they're not old. I'm not buying it.
And they have old guys and rookies. That's not a way to win.
No.
Because they're going to have a rookie at left guard and a rookie at left tackle. They are planning on having a rookie be a serious part of their as a running back as well. Kenneth Dixon.
Right.
Eventually, they're really counting on him. There's just a lot of rookies. You're just counting on rookies. And then you're counting on Steve Smith, who is, you know, 30 whatever he is. And
coming off
another Achilles. And on the other side, Breshad Perriman, who couldn't play a game for you last year, he's just got healthy.
Yeah.
He's a rookie. But that's just, you're counting on a lot of pieces that are not ready yet.
Yeah.
To me, they're a 7-9 type fish. Yeah, I mean, in my opinion. They were really injured last year, but I don't think that makes them suddenly better this year.
Right.
I just don't see it. We'll see. Maybe they surprise, but just too many rookies and old guys. It's not a way to win. So that's our thought on that. Thanks to all of our Swedish listeners. More Swedes coming out. The Swedish Minute ain't going nowhere. Swedish shout out. We're gonna keep since we have such a strong and important following there. We're gonna make sure we stick with it. All right, Jim. What's making you mad this week? Is anything making you mad?
Yeah, you know it. And there is going to be a recurring theme to this.
Are we driving again?
No. Well, I was driving. However, my beef is with pedestrians. Like sometimes, like, man,
they technically have the right of way.
No.
That's my
beef.
All right. Well, what's your
pedestrians who don't have the right of way who are just like, yo, I'm gonna cross the street, and not just pedestrians but cyclists. Ooh, I'm gonna bring out the cyclist hate.
Careful.
And they're crazy.
Peter King had to apologize for talking
you know
about
what?
Bike lanes.
Well, see, now that was an error on his part.
Yes.
Although I do think you should just cruise in the bike lane if you want. If there's no one there. That's right. I said it. You know why?
Man, we're going to...
You know why? Because the cyclists are like, hey, respect my rights on the road. Oh, red light, screw you. Oh, left turn on red, screw you.
No. That's the problem.
Turn on red. Right turn on red, screw you.
See me.
No. Don't see... Oh...
No, because here's the thing about that. I have full respect for cyclists. But if you're on the road and acting as a car, you need to act as a car
right.
and stop at the
red
light.
Paul's getting mad too.
No, that's true though. And
yeah.
I don't want. But you can't just say, "Oh, I'm a car, so I'm gonna go in this lane," and then you just go right through a red light. No, cars can't do that, and you're acting as a car. You don't get the best of both worlds.
Right.
You know, but if you're on the sidewalk or whatever, or a bike walk, whatever, depending on where you're at, you can go and do whatever you want, and you're a walker. You abide by those signs. But you can't get free reign.
So basically just cruising around Paul Brown Stadium.
Did you hit somebody? And I don't know about this.
No. Just cruising around. You know, there's a lot of one-ways and turn on reds, no turn on reds, and then, you know, arrows, all that stuff. A lot of pedestrians and cyclists, I think, just feeling themselves a little too much.
Feeling themselves a little too much. And don't be a slow walker across a crosswalk. When like a line of cars are waiting to turn left, and you get the one person who's just going to do the slow stroll, I wish you would try
like
to take me out.
Like photographer Sam
right
Green,
now.
Just doing
oh, Sam,
doo doo.
Sam does the slow motion.
I'm busting
walk.
You, Sam, right now. We're going to find out if you're listening to this BBP.
Probably not.
No, he's not.
But anyway, So that's what made you mad. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
And if you're walking around Paul Brown Stadium, look out for a gray Toyota Yaris.
Yeah, you.
That thing is out. Although your car would probably break if it hit a human. I don't think the human would break.
You might be able to jump over it.
It's not tall.
But still,
no. It's not tall. Anyway, well, all right. So we did our Swedish shout out, and we did what's making Jim mad, and so. Now let's get to our finale here real quick as we head on out to the end of this episode. We brought in Jeff Hobson. Of course, we're going to give him some walk-up music, being the strong Boston Red Sox fan that he is. So let's go to myself, Jim, talking with Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com. All right, well, the sounds of Sweet Caroline – means only one thing. We are again bringing the walls down. We've brought the wall down. Jeff Hobson, Jeff Butch Hobson of Bengals.com, joining us here for a bit on our season preview podcast. Butchie, how are you?
Well, it's a great honor to be here, guys. Thank you very much. Sweet Caroline is just symbolizing my own weakness. Sorry. It's the best I got. Listen, the best I can come at with you.
You're addicted to the Red Sox, and it pretty much between that and JFK.
Yeah,
I mean, there's not. That's 95% of your conversations.
There's nothing. I mean, you know, the 21st century is new to me. You know, I'm still living in the 1978 playoff loss, and I hate going. That's why I hate going to New York.
Yeah. Because of all that.
It's a little segue for you.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, you know, we've got you on here. It's a good time for us to have a little scribe breakdown of where we think this season is at. Because it's a little different. Usually nothing has changed. Over the last 3 years, everything was pretty much exactly the same. Right. Now, there's a few moving pieces. Let's just start on the offensive side of the ball. What's your take on how they're going to fare with a lot of new pieces, particularly earlier in the year when you're even without Eifert on top of having all the young receivers and everything else?
Yeah, they're going to struggle, I think, just because, like, you know, you guys have been talking about and writing about, you know, three rookie receivers is a sea change. You know, even in 2012, you had Andrew Hawkins was at least a CFL veteran, you know. I mean, This is uncharted territory for the last couple of years, and I, you know, it's funny, you look it through, and even Eifert's backup, Tyler Croft, I mean, he's going to be rusty, you know. So you're looking at the third tight end, you know, you're looking at their probably the best options besides AJ early on are Giovanni Bernard and maybe Rex Burkhead. Tyler Boyd's a great talent. I think he's going to be better than Marvin Jones and Muhammad Sanu at some point, but not on September 11th, 2016. So that's the question of the day. Can the offense, can the offense get through the first half of the season and keep this team in a race?
And you didn't even mention Hugh Jackson's not here.
Oh, right.
That's right. Know, I mean, it seems like we're used to Ken Zampezi being the OC now, but, I mean, everyone was saying Hugh Jackson was the reason that the offense took such a huge step last year, and now it's – something that needs to be talked about. That's also it's another guy in his first game.
Yeah, you're right. It's a guy. It's a, you know, but the thing about Kenny though, the reason I don't really worry about that or think about that is he's been with Andy for five straight years. He's never called plays, but he's been around play callers all his life, and I think he had a lot of input into the stuff that Andy likes to do. If anybody knows the plays that Andy likes, it's Kenny. Granted, it is different. It's a different situation. He's going to have to be calling plays while the bullets are flying, but I feel a lot better about him than I do about the rookie receivers and no Eifert.
Well, do you think, you mentioned the offense sort of getting through, but they really, and this was a theme all off season, was doubling down, if you will, on defense. Mm-hmm. And I know there's no Vontaze Burfict, but Vinny Ray, you know, I don't know how many teams have a fourth linebacker that has started as much as he has. I mean, do you think, especially with Darquez Denard coming back to practice this week, I mean, they're healthy, right?
I mean, isn't that kind of rather,
I mean, I know the offense has to manage, but I guess I'll flip it that way. Isn't the expectation maybe the defense will carry?
I think so. Clearly. I mean, this is going to be Vinny's 22nd start in his the last three seasons. So he's been around, and this has been this is a defense that looks better than it did at the end of last year.
Absolutely.
I mean, much was made about Reggie Nelson leaving, but, you know, Sean Williams is ready to fill that void, more than ready. And, Gino, as Paul Gunther has said, Gino is playing as Jim's good friend Gino, who he talks to all the time, is playing as he has been unblockable.
Yeah.
You know? So the only thing that worries me about the defense is the defensive line rotation has really taken a shot with the injuries to Billings and Hardison, and I wonder how that's gonna react. Deshaun Williams didn't have quite the preseason that he had as a rookie, although he came on the last couple of games. I thought Marvin talked about how he had lost some weight. Yeah, he had wanted to put on weight. He thought that would help him, and I think he came back a little slow. He seems to be getting back around, but you know that rotation is not going to be what it was. So that's a little bit of that's the only concern I really have on a defense, because I think you guys agree that's about as good as the defense has looked in the preseason, and you know, since I can remember.
I mean, I my take on this team this year, and when people ask this year they get over the hump, is look at what Denver did, look at what Seattle did. Those weren't potent offenses that were tops in the league. They won it with their defense, and they had an offense that was effective when it needed to be.
Yeah.
Seattle more so than Denver. I think this is a championship defense.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
I think that this is a defense that could lead the league pretty almost again, 2 points away last year, in fewest points allowed, and be better than that.
Yeah.
I think they can break their own franchise record for fewest points allowed. And I think that they could carry this team through the playoffs. We've seen it over and over again in the last 5-6 years. A team ranked in the top three in overall defense has been the one in playing in February.
You're exactly right. And I think the last time they were sitting like this was 2013, I want to say, maybe even 2010. They had the defense, but they did not run the offense to fit that style of play. I thought, and you know how I feel about the running game and being close to the vest.
No one can.
It harkens back to the
Sweet
Caroline days.
But I think you have to go in knowing, okay, we're a defensive. Our strengths are defense and special teams. Because although they lose Sid Pearman, they still got experienced guys in Nugent and Huber, and they still got some excellent teams guys. Darren Simmons is one of the best in the business. That's a strength, defense and special teams. So play to your strength on offense. Possess the ball. Don't turn it over. Put you in the best situations possible. Play the clock. Play the game. I think that's how they get through the first half of the year.
I asked a couple of guys this, and I'll ask you this. Can a team in this day and age of the quote-unquote passing league win like the Bengals did in 2009 by playing defense and teams and running the ball forever?
Yeah.
I think that you can make that argument, and there's teams that you can point to that I mentioned earlier that did, but you better be great on defense and special teams. And do you want to do that to Andy Dalton, a guy who took a step last year? Do you want to all of a sudden start reining him in, or is that just the best way they can win?
He took a step with Eifert, Jones, and Sanu. I think you got to be careful and want him to take the same kind of steps with Uzama, Boyd, and LaFell. I think you got to be careful with that. You have to manage that. And I think, I think more so now because everybody's playing nickel. Everybody's playing nickel defense. Now you pound them. That's what teams do. You know, that's what I think that's what the whole matchup thing is about. You know, the Bengals come out in three wides, and now you're running the ball with the zone play or whatever. You know, and I think, you get these guys, 60% of the game is the pass. So a lot of your roster is, you know, that's what I think sets the Bengals linebackers apart a little bit. I mean, I know they're a little slow in space and stuff like that. They're guys like Ray and Vontez, but they hit you and they know where to be and they're instinctive. And that's why they can play, they can kind of do both, you know. I think teams have a hard time adjusting to the run, because they see the pass so much. So I think it's, I see this whole season for Kenny Zampezi as one long run against the nickel package. You know, I think that's what they want. I think to me that's the ultimate matchup for them. But, of course, you have to get into down and distance and all that too.
Right.
One, I'll agree with you just from the jump, but then I'm going to add – interested in something here, your thoughts on this. I do think they will run the ball early. The heavy look will work for them. I think, Paul, you've been on record saying you think Jeremy Hill's going to have a breakout season or
I agree
return
with that.
So I agree with that, and I think that's an underrated part of Hugh Jackson's offense. People like to forget that Hugh liked to run the ball.
Yep.
But to your point earlier where you said Andy took that step with players A, B, and C who are not currently here.
Right.
I would argue or at least present the fact, isn't there part of this coaching staff and front office, though, that feels Andy is now at a point where he needs to bring other guys along? It's not just, oh, well, he had Marvin and Mo and Tyler, and they're all familiar with each other for 5 years. Andy's reached a level where he's going to make Brandon LaFell look like from 2 years ago, and he's going to make Tyler Boyd, as opposed to Andy from 2, 3, 4 years ago where he needed, AJ to go win jump balls, right? Yeah. I mean, or am I off base?
I think you're right. I think you're right, but they have to do it. Those guys have to do it. I mean, Andy can't make them separate. You know, he can't make Brandon LaFell catch the ball,
right?
And he can't make them separate. I think you're exactly right. I mean, Andy has to deliver the ball. When those guys are there, he's got to get it to them and give them the confidence.
Right.
But I don't, you know, he can't physically go out there and have Tyler Boyd, you know, run a route that where he can beat
right.
a guy. Although that's the one thing about it. It looks like Tyler Boyd can separate. That was
yeah.
kind of the one knock on him was
yeah.
that he might not be able to be a deep guy. But
separation isn't a lot.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
can make the contested catch as
yeah.
well. As
exactly.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean, Jimmy?
I think
Dalton has to get it there, and he has to give those guys confidence. Because to me, Andy's at his best. And you said it when he was trying to throw jump balls to AJ. It didn't work. You know, and
concern, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
On the flip side, is
yeah.
that you get out there and you're going against this Jets defense or whoever
yep.
over these first
yep.
5 weeks, and you only see one guy that you trust out there, and
yep.
you start shoving it into 18
well,
again, and
so.
You're right back where you were.
Can't do it.
When the mantra was after the season, Andy made too many bad decisions. Usually the bad decisions revolved around
right.
shoving it into 18.
Right. And remember why he shoved it into 18. Marvin Jones was hurt. Tyler Eifert was hurt.
Yeah.
AJ was hurt for much of the – he couldn't even shove it into 18.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to shove it into Mohamed Sanu.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, so that's – I mean, you know, those guys – I mean, LaFell has to play better than he did in the preseason.
And Dalton hasn't even completed a single pass to Brandon LaFell
right.
in a game
That's
yet.
Right. That's right.
I mean, they never worked together. So to think you're going to show up and be like, oh, I know exactly where 11's going to be
yeah.
is crazy.
But that's the way. But the quarterback's going to take the heat. Oh, he took a step back. Did he take a step back or did the people around him take a step back? And I know what you're saying. He should be better than that. Like a Brady, no matter – it just seems like no matter who Brady has around him,
yeah.
he brings him to that level.
That's what I'm curious. I guess that's the only question left for Andy
yeah.
Dalton,
right?
Because that was the whole thing this offseason.
Yeah.
No one asked any questions about him. Remember,
yeah.
as opposed to a year
yeah.
ago,
right.
it was all about
right.
where – and I think he answered a lot of critics. But in
yeah.
terms of the upper third, I mean, I think most people would say he's definitely top half, top
yeah.
fit, whatever you want
to
call
it. It's always an interesting question with him, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Where does he fall?
Right.
Jeez,
and it's
I,
like
you
if
know?
You're – you know, aside, playoff thing aside, that's like the last regular season measure, right?
Yeah, right.
Is taking –
right.
quote unquote, no name. I don't want to say no name, but
right.
taking the guys who don't usually do great things and,
yeah.
and all of a sudden they have
yeah.
65 catches, 800 yards, and it's like, wow, that was a really
yeah.
good year for this
you know?
Rookie or this veteran who
yeah.
we picked up on a you know, 1 year deal. You know, I
you know, and maybe he's done it. Maybe he did it in 2012. He did it with Armon Binns and two rookies, and they won 10 games
yeah.
somehow. And in 14. You know, he had Greg Little was in there a lot, and AJ was out a lot, and he got a big year out of Mo. You know, is that because he had to throw to Mo, or because you know, I don't know. It's a great philosophical question. You know, because is it the chicken or the egg? Is it Brady? Is it Brady, or has he got guys? And you have to do say it's Brady because you could
right.
put anybody in there, and he's done it. And maybe we're going to say after this year, we're going to say, well, geez, well, look at Andy. He had you know, third time in 6 years he's had been. A bunch of young receivers, and he went to the playoffs.
I think it's Eifert.
Yeah.
I mean,
no
I think it's Dalton,
yeah.
and I think it's
yeah.
Eifert, and I think what set them apart was their chemistry last year that was apparent.
Yeah.
You look at why he threw more touchdowns, because he had a guy he knew how to throw it to, could make plays for him in the red zone.
Yeah.
I mean, there was
yeah.
safety in Tyler Eifert, and I think that's why him not being on the training field with
mm-hmm.
Nick Cosgray and how long that takes is going to be a big part of how far this offense goes. And in the meantime, Jeremy Hill is going to have to show up, and that running
yeah.
game's going to have to show up, and they're probably going to have to get a couple of squeakers against some quality teams. When you talk
yeah.
about opening with the Jets and the Steelers and
yeah.
the Broncos, and
yeah.
then the Patriots aren't too far off. I mean, there's just a lot of – those are teams that – guess what? Those are teams that we will be talking about when we're talking about tiebreak scenarios
yeah.
and playoff
yeah.
seeding
right.
come the end of December is going to be head-to-heads in these three games.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
you're talking about the North title could be decided in week
right.
two.
Yeah.
It's
right.
happened before. It pretty
right.
much happened last year where that series decided it. All right, so here, let me
– Maybe
let me,
it is, but let me just say, maybe it is Dalton because Marvin Jones had how many touchdowns in 2013 in the red zone
yeah.
before he got hurt, right? Maybe it's Andy, but I agree with you. I think Eifert. They haven't had a guy like Eifert in maybe ever. Maybe
yeah,
Danny
and,
Ross.
And
know.
At the perfect
yeah.
time when his position has
yeah.
never been more
yeah.
at the central of the best offenses
right.
in the league. Look at the best offenses in the league. They all seem to have a tight end this dynamic.
But you're exactly right. They may by the time he gets back, this thing may be decided.
Right. They've got to push themselves through. I want to ask you one last question, and we'll wrap it up here. Is this the year that they get the playoff win? I mean, I know that we probably every single show that you or me and Jim have ever gone on that wasn't like on 700 or 1330, we've been asked this question. Yeah. So I'll play the role of ignorant national guy, and I'll ask you, is this the year that they get the playoff win?
Tell me who the quarterback is. Tell me if the quarterback's healthy and the Pro Bowl wide receiver is healthy.
You have Dalton and Green.
You have Dalton and Green, then they win it.
They win a
playoff game. Because, honest to God, karma and the gods would have to demand it. After what happened in the last minute 23 last year, you know, there would be something perverse if they didn't, you know, there'd be
There's been something perverse going on here for a number of years.
But if you look at their five losses in the playoffs, this is devil's advocate, right? The first year, they a rookie quarterback winning on the road. I give him that, not winning that one. In 2014, you, Jimmy, and me were lined up a wide receiver in Indy. Not going to win that one. And then last year, what was the last time a rookie quarterback won a playoff? A quarterback won a playoff game with less than four starts? Right? It was been like 35 years or something. So I can see him not winning that one. The one that sticks out though is that 2013 game against San Diego at home.
13-12 should have won. Last year. When you have it,
that's true.
Guess who didn't lose that game for them?
Right,
AJ McCarron, arguably.
Right. The defense did not give those guys. They didn't give those guys a touchdown. As it later went back and
we
found out.
Yeah. Yes,
which is a hell of an effort. But you're
against that offense. So you're saying it happens if Dalton and Green are healthy?
I think so. I think it's time. It's time. You know, and any time you have a great defense, this is what Bengaldom has learned, thanks to Mike Zimmer. Defense makes it so much easier. There's no coincidence why they've won why they've been to the playoffs six of the last 7 years. It's because they've had a defense.
Yep, and it's as good as it's ever been right now. So we'll see if that's it. Butchie, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you out in New York. We'll see you around town in New York.
Huh? I'll be there. We're staying right near you, so there'll be some tales from the road. You know, because we've got to all meet up because we had to recreate Oakland last year when Skinny and I made the great Jacksonville Jaguars bet.
Yeah.
That was where it happened.
Much fodder.
A few pops and a whole lot of brazen attitude caused that bet to come to fruition.
That will continue for 15 months.
Ozzie Nelson at home, Ozzie Osbourne on the road.
All right, Sweet Caroline's going to take you back out again, so we appreciate it. We'll take you back out with your 70s hit, just like your 70s run game.
God love Mookie Betts. Thank you.
Touching me. Touching me.